Without Jerry McInerney, we would have won 10 games this year. Okay? Not 10.
DeVito, pop pass, end zone, touchdown, and the ball game. DeVito, in relief, wins it for the Orange.
They don't know about the Kumbaya meetings we had this week.
Swing and a miss. It is over. The Boston Red Sox, baseball's best all season long. They have won it all.
The Bills make me wanna shout.
Josh Allen, touchdown Buffalo. A 14-yard quarterback draw.
Somebody in Vegas told them they were going to win by 20.
And the celebration begins.
This is On the Block.
Right, you know, there's validity in that opinion.
Here's X-Men.
On ESPN Radio 97.7, 100.1, ESPN Radio, Utica Road. Heard on 96.5 FM, heard wherever you are, whatever you are doing on the ESPN app. I was not using the ESPN app while out there. I hit that little white ball around. I was supposed to participate in, I guess, what was dubbed the Sportszilla Open. Somehow our friends at the Sportszilla show had kind of put together this foursome of the great Mario Sacco, Mark Larson, yours truly, Nico Tamurian, and what would have been an epic golf match, unlike anything you've ever seen. Didn't get the opportunity to do that today, though, as... I know. Everybody was let down, but first of all, the weather was crappy. Uncle Brent doesn't play in crappy weather. But second of all, had something going on at home today. Nothing too crazy, but just had to stay home for part of the day and could not make it out to the golf course. And apparently, Mario and Mark played in a monsoon anyway. So that would have been usually a good spot to have the ESPN app at your behest there if you want to listen while you're out there doing other things. But sad to report that that did not happen. But don't worry. We'll get out there and we'll whip him into shape. Don't you worry about that. So if you're listening in those traditional means, we certainly do appreciate that. You can also watch the program. Now, Brent, how do you watch a radio show is what you say to yourself. Well, the magic of Twitch is how you do that, friends. Twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Find Q Sports Talk on Twitch. And here we are. Hello, Twitch friends. The visual experience of the program, there is a live chat there on Twitch where you can opine as much as you'd like throughout the show. If you were here yesterday, you saw some fun hijinks and tomfoolery we were doing during commercial breaks, which we'll certainly do again today. Not the same things we were doing yesterday. We ate enough chips for a generation yesterday, so I don't think we're going to be eating chips again during Twitch breaks. But we like to keep the microphones on during radio breaks and just kind of, you know, shoot the breeze, see what comes up, maybe react to some things we're discussing on the show, things that don't necessarily make the show. You never know what's going to happen. When the great Paulie Sibilia comes in at some point in one of our Twitch breaks to wish us well, good luck, we're all counting on you. We will have to wish Paulie a happy 64th birthday to Paulie Sibilia. That's right, kids. What'd you get Paulie for his birthday today, huh? Did you get him some Werther's Original or an AARP discount, right? Or I'm just going to make all the bad puns here, all the bad old puns. They're coming. Just get ready for them. You know they're happening. You can do that all you want. They're just coming, okay? By the way, it's 4 o'clock, so Paulie about to have his birthday dinner. So we don't want to disturb that, but happy birthday to one Paulie Sibilia today. Well, what's happening is so we go through the course of the afternoon. Well, right here in this hour, our friend Sal Capaccio will join us. Now, there's a couple of Bills notes we want to get to. It is mini camp, and always want to talk football when Sal comes on. But I actually had another purpose in mind for sale today, as your New York Yankees are in Buffalo. And I texted Sal today and I said, hey, I'd love to have you on. The Yankees are out there and talk some Bills and just catch up. And Sal was like, it's probably not a good idea for you to let me talk about the Yankees right now. And I said, all the better, to have you on. He's a big Yankees fan, of course, Syracuse alum, big friend of the show. So we'll get into the Yankees in Buffalo, the dynamic there, talk some Yankee baseball with a big Yankee fan, and, of course, get a couple notes in there on Buffalo Bills minicamp. So Sal Capaccio right here this hour. John Wildhack had a press conference not so long ago. You heard it live on ESPN Syracuse and saw it live at twitch.tv/QSportsTalk, but we're going to revisit some of the things that John said today. He covered a lot of ground on a number of subjects, which was the purpose of the press conference. It was kind of that end-of-the-year thing. A lot happened, certainly. A lot of big, meaty topics asked about at the press conference. So we'll go through some of the highlights of that later in the show. I'm going to focus on one in particular here in the monologue shortly, but certainly worth revisiting a lot of what John Wildhack said, so we will do that later in the show. We now have the first TBT roster, Boeheim's Army. Quite a collection of talent here. And look, my take on Boeheim's Army this year is just go win the darn thing, right? Overseas Elite, the team that wins it every year, they're out. Another impressive roster. Eric Devendorf teasing that there's three bigger names to come, three other exciting players to be added to a roster that had some significant names on it. There's been some coaching changes, some different moves here. Maybe Kevin Belby's in the same frame of mind I am here. Like, look, I enjoy this little summer tradition, this little like fantasy camp we all get to be a part of. But it's go time. Go win the $1 million. Go win this thing. Come on. Let's go. So we'll tell you who's on Boeheim's Army initially with more to come later in the show. Blindside and hot takes as usual as we go. But one thing that John Wildhack addressed today is something I wanted to focus on. And that is now as Wildhack comes into, believe it or not, you blink an eye, and he has been on watch, if you will, has been the athletic director at Syracuse for 5 years. His five-year anniversary is right around the corner. Now, you'll recall that John Wildhack took over as athletic director at Syracuse for Mark Coyle. Mark Coyle was here for approximately 17 minutes as the athletic director at Syracuse. But in that 17-minute time frame, which may or may not be accurate, but it was 8 months, right? He was in and out. He took over for Darryl Gross. Was that in between? People think that Wildhack took over for Darryl Gross, but there was a name briefly wedged in there, and that name was Mark Coyle before Mark got the Minnesota job and left Indianapolis Colts style, right? Packed up a moving van, got the hell out of here. But in his short stint as athletic director, Mark Coyle did the most significant thing that an athletic director can do, hire a football coach. Now, there's a lot of things that fall under an athletic director's watch. Wildhack even mentioned that today. We'll play that clip coming up, but there's a lot of things athletic directors do. It's not that traditional putting together schedules and organizing that you think of. In the modern era, you're a fundraiser. You got to build up money for facilities. You got to get big gifts from big boosters, big alums. Media rights are very important, which is certainly right in his wheelhouse, of course, being a longtime ESPN executive. There's just more to the game, the big picture thinking, the small picture things, dealing with issues when they come up. But really, the biggest thing you can do at a high-profile Power 5 school is hire a football coach if that's necessary. You might get lucky and not have to do that. You might have a Dabo Swinney. You might have a Nick Saban. You might have an entrenched, established name that's not going anywhere. Well, we know that's not the case at Syracuse, right? We know that we have seen the coaching change come up every few years as a discussion. John Wildhack didn't hire Dino Babers as head coach. Mark Coyle did, but what John Wildhack did do was extend Dino Babers as head coach. But did he really? And what I mean by that is, after that 2018 season, the magical 10-win buildup, Dino comes in, just won everybody over. People really embrace him as a person, as a coach. They like his personality. They like the way he treats his players. They like the pop culture references. Just kind of feels like a guy you can relate to. And I think really at the heart of it, everybody likes Dino Babers, right? Like, tell me somebody.
Thanks, Brent.
You're welcome, coach. Who comes across Dino in some way and says, boy, that dude, that freaking guy, right? Nobody says that, okay? Everybody likes Dino and appreciates the enthusiasm he brings, the locker room speeches, like I said, the pop culture references. Like, he's a dude. Like, he watches the same movies you do, and, like, he's very relatable in that way. But it's a cutthroat business, and as a football coach, through it all, you got to win. And we've seen it all with Dino. We've seen the first couple of years, we're okay, we're getting used to this. We got this high-octane offense. We're seeing something different here. Okay, pulling off an upset, beating Virginia Tech and beating Clemson. It's like, okay, here we go. And then 2018, the 10-win season, and everybody's thinking, like, hey, we're back. While being realistic, while understanding you're chasing Clemson and understanding that Syracuse football is nowhere near that high elite level, but, hey, you showed it to us. And last year we saw, of course, the bottom of the pit. Now, there were certain asterisks you have to attach to that conversation. COVID did not affect the team in terms of losing games, but it affected the team in terms of players that opted out, practice time, injuries affected this team as the season went along, and all that has to be well noted, but was COVID the main reason that team won a single game last year? I don't think that would be fair to say. It's absolutely part of the conversation. It would be unfair not to note it, but you're not going to tell me COVID's the reason they won a game. But that's what this year is for. So today at the press conference, I asked John about that very thing, approaching 5 years, what he thinks about looking back and going ahead. Now, he didn't want to look back. He respectfully said, you know, I'm not somebody that looks back. I'm looking ahead. And he brought up the thing that really an athletic director will always be defined.
One of the things that's clear as we look ahead is we will continue to address football, and we need to continue to address our performance in football. Nobody's, you know, a one-win season is not acceptable to anyone. We've had a really good off season. To date, a really, really important offseason to date in terms of development of our team, the development of our players, also our staff, our new members of our staff. And I think there's a number of things you look forward to is, all right, we're going to tackle NIL sometime in the next five-year period. The work that's been done, the renovations to the stadium, we'd like to do more. So we're not done yet. We're proud of what we've done. We can't wait for our fans to be able to experience that in person. There's other facilities that we want to address here in the Manly complex in that time frame as well. But at the core, it really goes back is what can we do to even do better the support and the services we provide our student athletes? Because when I get asked by recruits, what does an AD really do? And I said, it's really pretty simple. We're in the business of developing young people. And if your son, your daughter comes here, we want to develop them to their full potential academically and athletically, and we're never gonna veer from that.
So that's John Wildhack generally on the question of looking ahead, but a big part of that answer was football. Now, I read a fascinating piece today. I would encourage you to read it yourself if you are a subscriber, even if you're not, on The Athletic, about the modern world of college football and what The Athletic's doing right now, and they're doing a great job at this, is they're kind of taking a big picture look at college football as they would do every offseason, but in particular with the arrival of the 12-team playoff and how that is expected to go through and how that's going to change college football. And you say to yourself, well, how does that affect Syracuse football? How does that affect my belief in Syracuse football? I don't think you're going to like the answer to that because they exist in this sort of weird vacuum as it is now. But I'm reading this today and it made me less encouraged of Syracuse taking significant steps forward and even getting back to that 10-win feeling of a few years ago. Maybe that can happen once a decade or so, and that's all prevalent on like coaching but quarterback. You got to have the quarterback. At the heart of it, that team was successful because they had Eric Dungy. They had the guy. They had the quarterback. So that's always contingent in this conversation too. But let me read you briefly from this article on The Athletic. Quote, in the modern world of college football, a recruiting problem has resulted in a gap that continues to widen between the haves and the have-nots. In the 2021 recruiting cycle, 52 of the top 100 players in the 247 sports composite went to one of five schools. So essentially half of the top recruits went to one of the following five schools: Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, LSU, Georgia. And of those teams, not coincidentally, have rosters built to compete for national championships. That's why the college football playoff field seems to be the same every year. Ideas have been floated that could solve the recruiting imbalance to stop these six programs or so from landing the majority of the truly elite talent. You throw Oregon in there, a couple other teams that snag some players, but it's pretty much those five. Some of those ideas include an expanded college football playoff, as we noted, name, image, and likeness benefits, a salary cap for recruiting staffers, scholarship reductions. Now, those last two just aren't happening, or at the very least, they're going to be harder to get. We are getting an expanded college football playoff, and we are getting name, image, and likeness benefits, though that remains to be seen of how individual schools handle it, different states, different state laws. It's unequivocally going to provide a recruiting advantage, but really, in college football, there's only so much talent to go around to build powerhouse conferences. Is the playoff the problem, or is the problem the same five, six schools get recruits? It's kind of a chicken or the egg thing. Of the 28 total semifinal spots available in 7 years of the playoff, 20 have gone to Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, right? So it's the same teams. And I'm thinking to myself, how is Syracuse football just going to get back to the point where it can be in a competitive situation, where it could just have the expectation of having a winning team again, of having a bowl game, as that's the standard, that's the basement. That's, if we don't do that, that's considered a failure again in the modern era, when that's what you're dealing with. And I'm not breaking any news here, but the way that this article laid it out, hearing Wildhack describe how one win is unacceptable and everything, and look, we're going to get into it when football comes, and the questions will be there, and the questions are fair. But if you really want to be honest about it, like, what can they do? What is the barrier? What is the expectation when this is what you're dealing with? Recruiting, recruiting, recruiting. All right. Even if you bring in the best talent evaluators you can, up your facilities, renovate the Carrier Dome, have the right coach, all that stuff. Like, what are we looking at here? And I don't like that feeling. And I'm glad that the college football playoff is expanding. There's going to be renewed interest here. But Syracuse is just stuck in the spot where you are competing with Clemson. Other schools can say, well, at least we don't have to directly compete with some of those five. We can kind of find another way in. Think of like a group of five team or something of that nature. Syracuse is directly competing with one of those juggernauts, with Clemson. So for those that say, well, if they, whatever it is, go 3-9 or 4-8 or 5-7, oh, you got to fire the coach and start over. And I don't blame you for saying that, but I'm just kind of at the point where I'm like, well, who's the guy you're going to go find that's going to leapfrog all the programs that are right on the edge of those five or six and say Syracuse is the place where I can compete with those five or six, where I can truly be that coach, where I can truly be a standout elite guy. I'm the next up and comer, and Syracuse is the place where I'm going to go, where I'm finally going to knock on their door. Well, it's not. And it's not going to be anytime in the foreseeable future. So what's that next level? Is it kind of what Syracuse basketball is? They're not quite Duke, North Carolina first tier, but they're clearly in that right next tier where they're going to make Sweet 16s, they're going to make the tournament. They're going to make Final Fours at least once or twice a decade. Like, what's the college football equivalent of that? And is that where Syracuse needs to be? At some point, and you think about the next 5 years, remember, John Wildhack signed a contract extension through the year 2025. So he's on watch here, no matter when it comes to a head that he's got to make a decision about football. But you will be judged, and the biggest decision you will make as an athletic director is about football. Can he get Syracuse to that level, that second tier, with or without Dino Babers? Of everything that Wildhack talked about today that he deals with, some of this stuff is just what every athletic director deals with in the context of college football, but the things you have direct control over. And what he said about improving the lives of student athletes, that's obviously true. But you're determined, your fate is determined. by football. So that's what I'm thinking about, not only in the foreseeable future, but for the next 5 years. And I found it interesting. The question that I asked was just, hey, you've been here for 5 years? Looking ahead the next 5 years, kind of what you feel like you've accomplished, what you want to accomplish, first thing you thought of, first thing you went to, and I appreciate the honesty there, is it's football. You are defined by that. And on that note, we will break. We will come back. We can certainly continue this discussion later in the program, as we will. We'll listen back to a number of other things that Wild Hack discussed today. He was asked about Dave Petromala, confirmed as the new defensive coordinator for Syracuse lacrosse. We're going to hear from Petro on the show Thursday, by the way. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with the new Syracuse defensive coordinator. Women's basketball, all the transfers, NIL, succession plan for basketball. He was asked about a number of things today, and we'll play back some of those highlights later in the show. Sal Capaccio is going to join us from Buffalo just a few minutes here, not only on the Bills, but really more of a focus on baseball, Major League Baseball in Buffalo. The New York Yankees taking on the Buffalo Blue Jays, if you will. So we will discuss that. Coming up with Sal in just a few minutes, we'll talk to you throughout the program at 437-7644. Brent Dax Media on Twitter. And as mentioned, the live chat up and flowing at twitch.tv/CuseSportsTalk. Our stock market update coming here shortly as well, how the market did today from our friends at Lee Baldwin and Company. And it is the man himself, Lee Baldwin, here to tell us all about that. How are you, sir?
Brent, doing well. You have a full show today.
Always, my friend. We don't mess around here, man.
Well, 5 years goes fast. Things were kind of slow in the market, though. It was kind of a little boring. We were down a little bit, and we might have turned on some U.S. Open previews later this afternoon. So
there we go.
Not much to talk about, but the diamonds are our oil stocks. That summer driving season is coming up on us, and DraftKings gets the dog down 4%, but they were down 11% earlier, so maybe they've got some short interest in them.
Speaking of U.S. Open, don't bet on Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka playing together later this week. Apparently that was proposed, but I believe it was Koepka that said no on that.
They were just talking about that. That might go like 12 rounds, right?
Or it just could be a lot, 18 holes of awkward silence. One way or the other, I'm bummed we're not seeing it, Lee. I'll just say that, my friend.
I know. That would be fun.
Thanks as always, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Brett.
Okay. Thank you, sir. It's Lee Baldwin, who you can find at Lee Baldwin & Company. You can find in Kaz. You can find in Utica. So you have all the diamonds and none of the dogs on your portfolio. Thank you, sir. Thanks to Lee Baldwin & Company, as always, for the stock market report. Thanks to you for hanging with us today. We're going to come back right after this with Sal Capaccio. Stay right there.
This is On the Block with Brent Axe.
That it is, friends. You know what's happening Thursday, and the weather looks absolutely chef's kiss. Mwah, spectacular. Picnics at the park. Presented by your friends at Taste of Syracuse, the Summit Federal Credit Union, Tops Friendly Markets. And this is happening every Thursday throughout the summer. So if you can't go this Thursday, you'll have plenty of chances. At Onondaga Lake Parkway, it's happening every Thursday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Right in that grassy area there behind the park. You know where it is. Food trucks serving their full menus as well as dollar samples made famous at the Taste of Syracuse. Live local music, including many past Taste of Syracuse performers. I don't think Olivia Newton-John's coming by anytime soon, but, you know, other great past Taste of Syracuse performers. Full listing of food trucks and entertainment is available at tasteofsyracuse.com. All right, John Wildhack addressed the local media today. As you can imagine, a number of subjects covered. End of the year press conference was kind of the main crux of the conversation, but certainly went in a number of directions here. Let's start with this, and no order in particular here, just kind of looking at some of the clips we cut up here. On the women's lacrosse head coaching search, as that on goes here, Dave Petromala officially confirmed today as the new defensive coordinator for Syracuse men's lacrosse. Petro is going to join us later this week right here on the block. I believe he's going to do a little Zoom with the local media too, so you'll get to know Petro, hear from him later this week. But on the women's lacrosse front, John Wildhack said this about that as it stands now.
We have a short list of candidates. Some will be in this week and we'll conduct interviews. We're very, very pleased with the list. We've done a lot of research and thorough vetting over the past several days. I'm not going to put a timetable on an announcement, but as I stated last week, we want to move with alacrity, but we're going to make sure we're really, really thorough. And our aspirations for that program remain as they were when Gary was head coach, and that is to resource this program to compete and play and win national championships.
As I said yesterday on the show, and I want to be careful not to say any names here and be respectful of the process going on, and, you know, I brought up Dave Petromala's name because I knew they were talking. I knew that process had gotten to a point where I felt comfortable saying, look, this is a name to look out for. This is somebody they want for the job, and lo and behold, here we are, and they're there. Make no mistake about it, Wildhack is taking some big swings on this one. I think you can safely assume that names like Kayla Traynor are in the mix, Joe Spallina at Stony Brook in the mix, but some of the other names I've heard they're trying to land interviews with, like, they're shooting for the moon here, and they should, because that is a program that has literal championship aspirations. They were in the national championship game this year. Came up recently, of course, in the world of college basketball with Coach K stepping down. John Shire steps in. Go back a couple months, Roy Williams steps down, Hubert Davis in. So succession plans, keeping it in the family, that's certainly, you know, points at Syracuse basketball. You know, sometime in the year 2058 when Jim Boeheim steps down, will a current assistant or keep it in the family? What is the succession plan? Is that something that Wildhack's thought about?
I've always spent some time, you know, in terms of succession planning for all of our sports. You identify a list of candidates, right? You know, every AD does that. You know, internal candidates, external candidates. You know, and at the right time, you know, we'll address that. We're very fortunate in our three assistants, Coach Autry and Coach McNamara. Both of those, they will both be head coaches someday. I firmly believe, and they'll both be successful. Coach Griffin, you know, Allen's done a really good job since he's been here. Doesn't have quite the experience that Jerry or Adrian does, but we've got a great staff, and either Jerry or Adrian, they're capable of being a head coach, I think, anywhere in the country. But we're also, as we did for men's lacrosse, we hired Gary, not because he's an alum, because we thought he was the best person to be the leader of our men's lacrosse program. We'll apply the same criteria to our men's basketball program.
Here we were a year ago, and John did a lot of media sessions as we were kind of navigating through COVID, how it was going to work with COVID. And I think John made a pretty interesting point today that 90%, now, if you take rainouts out of the equation from baseball and softball, they played 90% of scheduled events in the ACC last year. Syracuse lost a couple of games, both on the men's and women's basketball front, due to COVID, and players that were involved with COVID lost players, right? Lost individual players, but the women's team had to shut down for a couple of weeks, and, you know, COVID was inevitably going to get in there, but boy, they made it through in all sports a lot better than maybe we thought they would this time a year ago. And he brought that up. Now, here we are a year later going into what seems to be a normal season, right? If you will, New York State today basically waiving all COVID remaining regulations. They're at a 70% rate of people having at least one COVID vaccine. So we're 90 days away from Syracuse football starting, and who knows what capacity limits are going to look like and the crowd and things of that nature. But how is Syracuse kind of moving forward here on student athletes getting vaccinated? What rate is Syracuse at there?
The university is required, you know, all students to be vaccinated, all faculty and staff to be vaccinated with two exceptions, medical exemption and religious exemption. So that applies to all of our student athletes. We have communicated this multiple times to our student athletes and their parents. Our vaccination rate amongst our student athletes is probably close to 90%. So it's been really, really good. And again, part of what we did is we did a tremendous amount of education, and we had outside medical experts locally, nationally, you know, talk, do Zooms with our student athletes and their parents in terms of the effectiveness of the vaccines, the safety of the vaccines, to try to instill confidence in those who are somewhat reluctant to get the vaccine. The other thing that we told our student athletes is the best way you can have a normal college experience from a competitive standpoint, being with your team, being with your friends, going to class socially, is to get vaccinated. For those who aren't, there'll be a testing policy that'll be determined by the ACC Medical Advisory Group, and then that'll complement with what the university does in terms of testing for non-vaccinated people as well. But I think the key headline is you know, we're at about 90% now, and that'll increase between now and when our other teams come back.
Financially, dealing with the pandemic was going to be a challenge. Here's what Wild Hack said about that. Now, they lost a significant amount of revenue because, of course, no fans in the building last year, no March Madness in 2020. There was one this year, but you know, looking at some financial things going back to last year, they got hit by the pandemic, and they're starting to come out of that, but here's what Wild Hack said.
I salute our staff. I salute our coaches. We did a really good job of managing our expenses, limiting our expenses, cutting our expenses last year, while not in any way jeopardizing or sacrificing the services and support we provided our student athletes. You know, that was, you know, that's sacrosanct. That's why we do what we do. As we segue into the next year, we're still going to be really conservative on our spending. Part of that goes back to Nico's question. Until we know exactly what we're going to have from a capacity standpoint, I think it's most prudent for us to really manage our expenses very, very carefully, and we'll continue to do that. And then if we are at full attendance, then there'll be opportunities for us, all right, to increase, you know, the spending cuts that we instituted last year.
11 transfers out of the women's basketball program was pretty jarring. How did Wild Hack see that, the conversations he had with Coach Q, the expectations of the program? Everybody got hit by the transfer portal differently. Syracuse women's basketball, one of the highest rates of transfers, certainly with the portal, and there was a number of reasons we've gone over for that, but was he concerned? What were the conversations like? Here's what he said.
The portal, it's not unique to us. 11's a big number, I get it, but there are other programs that had 8, 9 in there, you know, on the women's side and the men's side, so it's not unique to Syracuse. It's a sign of the times, sign of reality. One of the things that about the portal in general, which concerns me, Chris, is there are kids who are going to put their name in the portal. They may not have a landing spot. You know, think about that. They may not have a place to go back to. They may not have a place to play. All right. Not only do they not get to play, what happens to their college education? What happens to that scholarship? And that really, really concerns me. In terms of women's basketball in particular, we had a number, I think it was 5, who had graduated and either received their undergrad or their graduate degrees. They had 1 year left. You know what? They've done what they came to Syracuse to do. They got their degrees. They played at a high level. They got 1 year left. If they want to go someplace to play, you know what? They have the right to do that, and you know they will always be part of our program. You had others. You know, you had some 4 freshmen who transferred out. I think part of that is you know, we're not going to, from a culture perspective and what we ask of every student athlete, we're not going to deviate from that. Whether it's in times of, you know, we get out of COVID or when we're in COVID. And we've had an influx of transfers coming in. We've got, you know, 5, you know, high school freshmen who are coming in, who are on campus now. So it's just, it's reflective of the time a little bit, and you're going to see more roster turnover. And I think it's really going to be a challenge for every coach in terms of roster management. Right. And I worry most for kids who are in the portal in football, men's basketball and women's basketball, who don't have a landing spot. What happens to them?
So that was kind of a general assessment of the portal and how it affected Syracuse. There's a little bit more how it pertains specifically to Syracuse.
I sat with Q. We talked about it numerous times. We had really candid conversations. You know, I totally support him. I support the values that he has for this program. I support the standards that he holds everyone to. you know, regardless of what, you know, what your high school ranking was or how good a player you are or how good a player you aren't.
That seems to be what's flushing out of this. There was a lot of concern, and questions were answered rightfully, by the way, when you just had this mass exodus from the program. And again, yeah, you had five players that were seniors and moved on, four that were suspended last year for a violation of team rules and probably weren't coming back. And then that creates a domino effect. Camila Cardoso looks around and says, where'd everybody go? And she goes for a greater opportunity. And I'd be stunned if she doesn't end up a national champion at some point at South Carolina, because that's just an incredible program. Right? Emily Anxler just felt like, in essence, what's the normal transfer? Someone that just, you know, looks around and says, I'm better off somewhere else, and I'm going to take this opportunity to go there. What seems to be flushing out of that? And a lot of people were asking questions like, you've got to look into this program and what's happening. And we did. And you know, what we found was basically, and I don't want to make this declarative, you never know what can come down the road here, but Q's got tough standards. And maybe that doesn't mesh with some modern athletes and the way that they're adjusting. He makes it pretty clear, like, you're going to play for me. These are the standards. He could be pretty passionate as a head coach. I don't think he went over the line there from what I understand. Again, you know, if he did, then we're willing to listen to any players that felt like he went over the line. But from what we were able to gather, it was just, hey, it's not for me. 11 players is a lot. There are other programs, 7, 8, 9 go. So, I mean, you got a pretty strong backing there from Wildak. Sat down, talked to Q. This is the way it is. Backs his values, backs his standards. You got a team next year, by the way, full roster back, but you got 6 recruits, 7 transfers, 3 remaining players. Like, that is going to be a fascinating team to watch, just by the standpoint of how do you put a team together when they all have to wear those little tags that say, hello, my name is, and get used to each other. And look, when they lost to Connecticut this year, that was my big question. Okay, well, how much closer are you 5 years after being in a national championship game to getting a step closer to that program? If anything, you're taking steps back from that. They make the tournament every year. There's a pretty good standard. I'm not saying women's basketball has, you know, fallen off since then, but boy, when you get into the national championship game and 5 years later, you've pretty much established a pattern of, hey, we'll make the tournament, but it's not going to be much further than that first or second round. It's like, okay, well, what's going to get you to that next level? You had the player and Camila Cardoso to build around that was the answer to that, and after 1 year she left. So still a lot of questions there, but maybe it came a little bit more into the clear, and it was interesting to get the Wildhack's perspective on that. I believe we have time for one or two more here before we take a break, and I want to tell you about Boeheim's Army and how that's coming together, as we found out today. Just at the deadline, by the way, they had until noon today to file a roster that had 7 players on it and basically announced their intention to play in TBT this year. They barely made it, but pretty nice roster they're putting together so far, so we'll get into that. Name, image, and likeness, of course, is a big thing in college sports. We're hearing a lot about this. July 1st is a key date because I believe it's 6 states now that have passed legislation where that's going to come into play in a few weeks. And athletes in those states where the legislation was passed and is enacted July 1st can start literally cashing in on name, image, and likeness. New York is not one of those states. Syracuse has been monitoring the situation. They're getting ready for it. And here's what Wildhack said about that.
It's an interesting time. You're seeing different levels of engagement, right? You're seeing states pass legislation. In some cases, that legislation takes effect July 1 of this year. There's been activity in New York State Legislature in terms of crafting a bill. Congress held a hearing last week, Senate Commerce Committee. Senator Cantwell, Democrat from Washington, is a majority leader. The ranking member is Senator Wicker from Mississippi. I still think the best path and the best solution for all schools is to have federal legislation. So if there's one set of playing rules that everybody abides to, the NCAA is also considering trying to pass legislation before July 1. If you look at their proposed legislation and state legislations that have been passed or is proposed, They don't necessarily complement one another. So I think we're going to go through a period of turbulence, to be quite honest with you. In terms of what we're doing here, we're going to embrace NIL. I've told this directly to our head coaches and our senior staff. We're going to embrace NIL as an opportunity for our student athletes to appropriately leverage their name, likeness, and image for their profit. We support that. We're going to guide them to the greatest extent that we're allowed to guide. We're looking at establishing curriculums now and a program in which we can work with them and give them the appropriate education to do this and do this smartly.
And I think that's the smart approach. Embrace it. Be open to it. Make it a part of the curriculum. Make it a part of your education. I saw, shout out to the great Dave Maloney. Saw him today, who teaches at the Fox School, and he's preparing a curriculum about name, image, and likeness, not just for student-athletes, but for the students studying sports business. Like, it's here. Don't fight it. Embrace it. And some of it's beyond your control, state legislatures. And I think John makes an interesting point about a kind of a broad standard to it, but it's still going to be the Wild West for a little bit. People, like, much like the transfer portal, here's a rule change, but what's the effect of that rule change? It's going to take a year or two to really kind of get your bearings before we're like, okay. And in the meantime, there's going to be some extremes one way or the other there, but you can't fight it. You got to embrace it, and that's seemingly what Syracuse is ready to do. New York tends to be slow on these things, so they're getting the benefit of watching other schools and other states go through it first, but that could end up being a disadvantage if other schools get it, embrace it, and create a even bigger recruiting advantage out of it. Meanwhile, we're sitting here waiting for a state legislature to pass a law. Like, can you hurry up, please? Because we're losing players to these schools that can go do this. On that note, we shall break. We'll come back. Certainly can react to more of what Wild Hack said today. Boeheim's army has been put into play. Barely. Just made the deadline today for the basketball tournament, TBT 2021. What does the squad look like this year? And apparently there's more to come, as Eric Devendorf was teasing us on social media about today. Stay right there.